This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomanosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus with the state-of-the-art car wash. Good morning, Dr. Lou.
Hello once again to you, Laurie. Another, you know, busy week with all sorts of things to talk about. I mean, that keeps us employed, I guess.
And we're not taking a break for Thanksgiving. All right.
That's exactly the case. Well, listen, folks, you know, last week was such a disaster in so many ways politically, when you see the Build Back Better bill finally getting passed, and now that's going to the Senate, and let's just hope that Sinema and what's his name, Manchin, hold out and do not go along with this. We saw other issues that were good, though, like Kyle Rittenhouse getting off. I mean, a solid victory there, which I want to talk a little bit about. But then we closed the weekend with this disastrous story about what happened in Waukegan with the somehow a SUV plowed through the middle of a Christmas parade and killed five people, and we now have 40 people in the hospital. I mean, Laurie, this is the kind of thing that just puts a damper on everything, particularly in the forthcoming holiday season. And the fact that there was one video that I saw that this little six-year-old girl was standing on the road facing her parents. She was about 3 feet into the road. I mean, the car came a foot away from her. And, I mean, you think about all those five people dead already. I mean, she would have gone just like that. Mm. So what I'm suggesting here is that, you know, the national news always has its good and its bad. And the good part of last week was the Rittenhouse, you know, verdict. But the bad part is what we saw with the Democrats pushing this Build Back Better bill and what happened in Waukegan. Now, I don't want to talk about the Waukegan thing because it's just too fluid. We don't know enough yet. But I do want to talk about the Rittenhouse verdict and what happened with this Build Back. I want to talk a little bit about some of the foreign policy issues that are going on, particularly with the Ruskies and Les Chinois. And I think that I want to finish up today with two final discussions, one on the state level with our wonderful friends who did the redistricting. So I want to offer some ideas about that. And then on Friday, I spoke at the Alabama Federation of Republican Women about the plummeting case of Alabama education. And I proposed to them certain things, and I want to talk about that. The week, Thursday before Friday, I was speaking at the Baldwin County Board of Education, and I want to illuminate for everyone some of the disastrous scores that I brought out to the Board of Education, okay? The ACAP, which is the new Alabama test for all of their, you know, school children, fourth through eighth grade. ACAP showed only 14% of Alabama eighth graders at a proficiency level in mathematics. Now, when you tie that to the fact that we are 52nd in math in the national rankings, it seems to me that there's something that needs to be done. And according to a couple of articles that I read, the politicians, now folks, hold on, they finally awakened to the problem. No kidding. I mean, this is, the awakening has been there since 2019 when we hit bottom. Do you think they've done anything about it? Oh, no. So I want to just talk a little bit about that and illuminate to everything. And what's really interesting, if you go online, you can find Baldwin County Schools and how they performed last time. So I did this, okay, and I'm showing this to Laurie right now. Here's the list that I gave to the Board of Education, all right? This list, This list basically shows the scores in English and in math for the Baldwin County schools.
And I'm looking at three pages.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So I just chose anything below 40 percentile to highlight to the board, okay?
Okay.
So I did that, and I'll talk more about it. But you all are going to be astounded when you hear what I'm going to say. I know you can't wait to hear it, and I'm glad you can't wait, because I tell you what, if the people in Virginia got mad about what was going on in terms of what their kids were being taught, we should be out of the seat, in the car, going to Montgomery, demanding Ivy gets rid of Common Core. She can be the fifth vote. Okay? See, I'm almost ready to start talking about that, but I am going to discipline myself, step back, cool off just a little bit, so I can get hot about something else real quick.
Okay, we
All
must
right,
stay
so here we
tuned.
Are. Build back better. Okay, aside from the fact that there's going to be an inflationary impact here, and those of you who have heard us before, I've talked about this in any number of cases. The infrastructure bill that they passed is $1.2 trillion. The COVID package that they put out in March was $1.2 trillion too, if I'm not mistaken. The exact amount doesn't matter. What they did, though, was they injected in March another $1 trillion into the economy. And so what you're seeing here is more money chasing fewer goods. Think about fewer goods in terms of the fact that the Biden administration essentially has cut gasoline production. Okay? You have high gas prices now. He's going to OPEC asking the Saudis to produce more oil. This is an absurdity. Okay? But the fact of the matter is that lots of money chasing fewer goods. Look at the supply chain problems. So the inflation aspect of this has already started to erode the Democrats' ability to think carefully about keeping the House, thank God. Inflation is real. This next bill, the one that they sent over to the Senate, close to $2 trillion. And all it's going to do is just jack up the inflation even further. But aside from the inflation part of it, the reality is that this daggum bill has some really bad things that we need to think about. And that's why I think that, you know, I know that, you know, Joe Manchin and Sinema don't, you know, we're not their voters, okay? But we can certainly send our thoughts to them about why this is a disaster. A disaster not only from the inflationary standpoint, but a disaster from the standpoint of trying to fundamentally change the United States, becoming more wedded to a socialist model along European lines. And I think that this is something that we must deal with and hope that we can have common sense apply to Sinema and Manchin as they go through their thought process about what they're doing. So, I mean, another criticism of this whole business of what Biden is trying to do with Build Back Better, there was no mandate to do this. I mean, he wants to be FDR, but the reality is that the Democrats didn't sweep in with a 90%, you know, overwhelming number in the House and the Senate. No, the Senate's tied. The House has a slight six vote margin. Biden stole the election, okay? So, I mean, let's face it. The American public is not ready to go down an FDR path of fundamentally changing America. I know Obama wanted to do that. I know Soros wants to do it. And they're the ones that are probably, you know, in charge of all this. But the fact of the matter is, we cannot afford it, number one. I mean, think about this. And I've mentioned this on any number of occasions. Right now, the federal debt is at $28 trillion. It's going to go, if they pass this one, it'll be close to $30 trillion. And what that does and what it means is that the federal budget, like the money that we actually are bringing in, and what we've been able to dedicate not to paying off the debt we owe. No. All we do is pay the interest on the debt. Okay? At this point, you're talking about, $600 billion a year. It's going to eat up the budget if the interest rates go up to their normal rate. What happens to the budget if we now have to pay, 25, 40% of the budget just to retire the debt, the interest on the debt? It makes absolutely no economic sense. And yet, they're willing to gamble with the whole economic structure simply because they believe that this is absolutely necessary, although the American people really did not give them that mandate. But of course, that's irrelevant. They've got the power now. They can do what the hell they damn well please. And that's what they're doing. And hopefully, Manchin and Sinema will block it. Stand by to see what happens. But some of the issues that are going on with this thing, aside from the things I've just talked about in terms of inflation, in terms of, becoming a socialist model, the fact is that they have $80 billion to hire 87,000 IRS agents. And guess what? You're going to find more and more of the middle-class people being audited. This is a joke, okay? It also includes amnesty for millions of illegal aliens. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not ready to concede 6 to 8 to 12, however many million are here, to become citizens at this juncture. I mean, even the Gang of Eight that were trying to do this in 2014 did not automatically give these people a free card to citizenship. That's going out the door with this. And that's exactly what the Democrats want. They want these people to be Democrats, and they will definitely do anything they can to make it happen. And they're making it happen. We're two votes away two people are standing in the door saying no to this, Manchin and Sinema. If they cave, it's done. It's done. Okay? How about gas prices, are continued to go up because they are mandating, a Green New Deal. That's all that's going to happen with that. There is a tax to heat your home. Now, look, we don't live in Yankee land, so we don't have to deal with that kind of an issue. But the fact of the matter is, cold weather states, it gets cold as hell, and they need the gas to keep their houses warm, and they're going to have to pay a tax on it. You've got to be kidding me, okay? It dictates your children's education standards. And here again, we've been talking about how the Department of Education never had a mandate. In 1978, it never had a mandate to do a national curriculum. And yet that's exactly what they want. And here again, we get back to critical race theory. That's the heart of a national curriculum that they want, along with the Common Core business that we already have. So essentially what they've done is they've created little AOCs over the last 10 years in what they've been able to implement with Common Core, and they want to continue that, but they want to take it one step further by indoctrinating children along the lines of CRT, which is nothing more than whites oppress blacks. And again, I don't know how many times I've mentioned to you all about the social and political revolution that took place during the King years through the civil rights movement. And again, I'm not going to repeat all that, but that is a narrative that is in direct contradiction to what the hell these people are talking about today with CRT. If it hadn't been for white support, do you think Obama would have been elected? if white supremacy is the key things that us whites are all about, why is it that so many whites voted for Obama? Twice. Now, I sure as hell didn't vote for him, but not because of color, but because of his, guess what, his policies. You know, I wouldn't have voted for Biden no matter what, because of his policies. Policies have driven my particular vote. But I have to say, the people who are much more aligned along my lines in terms of policy happen to be Republicans. No? So my point here is that CRT is destructive, and we better stop it. And hopefully it's going to get stopped where we are with this whole business of Build Back. It's not Build Back Better, that's for damn sure. But be that as it may, you all should be, you know, writing to the cinema and to Manchin and asking them, begging them, please do not pass this. All right, folks, we'll have to see how that works out. But let's move on to another one of these topics that I thought was an important one to talk about, okay? And it's the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. Now, if you watch some of this, great. If you haven't watched it, go on YouTube and dial up the prosecuting attorney, the district attorney, the assistant district attorney, as he takes Kyle Rittenhouse through the case against him. And then take a look at Rittenhouse's lead attorney, Richards. Take a look at how he took apart the prosecution's case. The prosecution had a weak case. I'm not going to go through the details of all this, but the bottom line is that the defense destroyed the argument that the prosecutor tried to make was that Rittenhouse was nothing more than an active shooter. I mean, that was such BS, it was ridiculous. You know, the prosecutor said Rittenhouse lost the right of self-defense because he provoked these people into doing what they were doing. Well, that was turned inside out by Mr. Richards when he showed exactly like with Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum chased Rittenhouse, chased him down, calling him all sorts of names. You know? So Rittenhouse looked around, and after he, I guess Rosenbaum had thrown something at him, he turns. Rosenbaum is coming down fast on him. And suddenly, Rittenhouse feels like, if this guy gets to me, he's already said he wants to kill me. Well, so he's got his weapon, and he uses it. So the self-defense aspect of this was completely validated. In the other two cases, too. And yet, the whole lead-up to the case, and this is where we as conservatives have got to think carefully about what's going on with the media. Because all year long, Rittenhouse was called a white supremacist, you know, an agitator, you know. But what is really interesting, and sickening, is that on Sunday, after the verdict, after the reality of the prosecution's case falling totally apart, CBS had the audacity, I've got the quote here, okay? They basically said that Rittenhouse went from Illinois armed for battle. Well, I mean, folks, that was a complete lie. He didn't go from Illinois across state lines, and that's another issue they kept making. The kid had a family in Kenosha. His father lived there. He had uncles there. He worked there. You know? And yet CBS continues to malign the kid. And I think that, you know, you've got, I mean, I've got some other quotes here that are unbelievable, okay? Here's one quote. Modern GOP is what whites want, okay? That this whole idea that that Rittenhouse being, you know, exonerated is open season for any white guy shooting anybody else. Okay, it basically they continue to put this idea about white supremacy. It completely validates the whole argument in their terms of white supremacy is driving the train. So it didn't matter that he shot three whites. The only part of race that entered in it anything was when Rosenbaum was chasing down Rittenhouse and using the N-word, among other things. But you see how this fits the narrative that the BLM people want. This is the BLM propaganda. It's blacks being suppressed. Again, remember what I've talked about. The Marxist formulation was, you know, the workers being oppressed by the capitalists. Now you have blacks being oppressed by whites. They've just reformulated the Marxist version of how things are according to them. And I think that when you really start to think about this, it's impossible to understand this in any other way than that we are in a war with BLM and Antifa. And to a certain degree, because the media is where it is, they are winning. And it seems to me that we better awaken to this and make sure that Alabama stays strong in allowing people to defend themselves and finding ways to undermine the BLM Antifa propaganda. People in Congress have got to wake up to this too and start moving in the right direction on all this. That's my argument with all this. Okay. All right, so folks, I did want to talk about Russia and China, but I also want to talk about the state issues. So let me switch to the state issues right now, and if I have time, I can throw in, if Laurie gives me her usual generous approach to letting me have a few extra minutes, I'll talk about the Ruskies and the Chinese.
And I have another question. So okay, we need ahead. To look at moving your show to an hour.
Ah, yes. Okay. All right. So I'll have to get some more dinero from somewhere. Okay. All right. So let's talk about what I want to get in this whole idea of these two state issues. Okay. One of them has to do with the whole question of redistricting. All right. It is a done deal at this particular juncture, but there are obviously lawsuits that have been filed. Again, the NAACP and the Southern Poverty Law Center have indicated, well, they have filed in one case that I know of, okay? The point being, though, that anything we do with redistricting is going to be an issue. I understand that. And the problem that we have is that the GOP happens to be the majority. They have a supermajority, so they can damn well do anything they want, which should be a good thing. But again, it's how you use the power that you have that really is the final test. All right. In this particular case, it seems to me that the redistricting, that in one case, a candidate against Senator Elliott, his name is Mitchell Sims, he was in Elliott's district, and now he is one block out of his district. Is that an accident? I don't think so. I think it's in the incumbent protection approach to this, which we all understand happens. But on the other hand, it just seems like it raises some fundamental questions. But what's the resolution to this? Probably none. All right? There's another question, too, that comes up. Senator Albritton ends up losing two counties, I think Clark and one other that he had north of us, but he gained a portion of Mobile County. Now, one can ask the question, why in the world would they redistrict him into Mobile County? Well, one theory is, and he's going to be coming to our next meeting on the 6th of December. One theory is that because he's closely affiliated with the Poarch Creek Indians out of Atmore, that he now has a say in what is going to go on in terms of gaming in Mobile County, which would be direct competition for the Poarch Creek Indians if it went in the wrong direction. Now, we can say that that's just speculation, but it seems pretty clear that, you know, Senator Al Britton has a close relationship with the Poarch Creek folks. He gets Poarch Creek money, and they want their interests taken care of. So from the perspective of Political Science 101, it makes perfectly good sense for the Poarch Creek Indians to get what they want, their man on the inside in Mobile. Okay? So there we are with just those two points that I've made to you. There are other issues that are out there that were discussed in articles right after the redistricting, where other individuals who were running against incumbents found themselves, you know, redistricted out. However one wants to look at this, and I think I mentioned this the last time we were talking about it, if there is a silver bullet to this, a simple fix, an easy fix, please write to everybody that you know and tell them how to do this, because the argument is that if you can appoint an independent commission to take care of this, well, then everything will be hunky-dory. I just don't see how that's possible. There's nothing that is, no one can be independent as they try to preach this independent school of thought. All right, so let me get to this whole question with Alabama education. So on Friday morning, I spoke at the AFRW meeting. They gave me a few minutes to talk, and I basically laid out this question to everyone at the AFRW. How is it possible that we are now 52nd as of 2019, and that's the last time they did the NAEP scores because of the pandemic, 52nd in math, 48th in ELA, and as I pointed out, the ACAP scores, which is the newest test that the Alabama State Department of Education has put out, the PARCA analysis showed, and that's the Public Affairs Research Council, that they're the gold standard as far as the educrats go. PARCA says only 14% of our 8th graders, think about this now, this number I'm going to give you, only 14% were proficient in math. Let that sink in for a second, okay? 14%. How is this possible? You know? But if we can't answer the question of how is it possible, we sure as hell can answer the question, are we going to put up with it? Are we going to fix it? And as I suggested to everyone there on Friday, the fix means getting rid of Common Core math. Okay? That's the starting point. James Milgram, one of the best mathematicians who created the California math standards years ago when California was at the top, Milgram said no when they asked him to validate the math standards for Common Core when he was on that committee. Absolutely not. Sandra Stotsky said no to the ELA. We've been saying this for 10 years. I almost had
bleep, bleep.
The bleep, bleep button there. Right. Okay, so we've known about this. There's no reason except the BCA wanted Common Core. And guess what? The governor has kept it. And Katie Britt, who was the president of BCA, is now running to be your state senator. This is such BS that these people are trying to pull the wool over our eyes. There's nothing there except get rid of it. Replace Common Core with our 2009 standards. I handed out something to the members of the AFRW Friday morning, and it's a little graph. The little green line on the graph goes up, up, up on NAEP scores from 2003 until 2010. Okay? It levels off at 2011 when we adopted Common Core, and then it starts going down, down, down until 52nd in math. I'm sorry, guys. You know, you may not like hearing me talk about all this and the governor's responsibility. Too bad, okay? I've had it with this. Our kids are being left in the dirt because of it. It has to end. Well, it doesn't end when it comes to the latest ACAP thing. I want you all to think about this. Thursday last, I spoke at the Baldwin County Board of Education, and I handed them out a cheat sheet here that basically shows Baldwin County schools performed on the latest Alabama test. Okay, so I just did this randomly in terms of, okay, I'm going to take 40% and below and circle the names of those schools, okay? 40% below in ELA, 40% and below in math.
Okay.
All right? So 30 schools in Baldwin County are below 40%. And look, 40% ain't no high test. I'm sorry, okay? 40% is low. I don't know. You can tell me what you want. 60% is usually classified as a D, okay?
Right.
70% C, 80 B, okay? All right, 30 schools at a below a failing level, 40, okay?
For math. And English language.
English language, okay. 18 below 40. But listen to this, folks. I'm running out of time, but I want you to hear this, okay? Here are the schools that are in the teens. Now, F is 40, okay? How about F minus minus, I guess, for teen thing? All right. Baldwin County High School, 19.02. Baymanette Middle School, 11.11. Lori's eyes are getting bigger. Central Baldwin Middle School, 16.6. Almost done with it. Foley Middle, 11.3. Florence B. Mathis Elementary, I'm not sure where that is, 19.26. Pine Grove Elementary, 13.78. Swift School, 16.3. All right, I've just gone through a list that 40's bad, 50's bad, 60 is bad. Why are we accepting the fact that our kids are performing at such a low proficiency rate? My argument to the Board of Education last Thursday was basically, we're not doing what we have to do to provide the resources and the additional teachers and the aides to get these kids up to speed in math. You know what we're doing? We're spending $70 million on a new tech school. I'm all in favor of the tech school. That is not the issue. Why did it go from $10 million to $70 million?
Whoa.
Yeah, whoa. All right? So look, we've been asking this question for a long, long time. Why are we not dedicating the money? And I'm not saying don't spend money for a tech school. You could spend $10 or $20 million on a decent school. But oh no, we got to go Taj Mahal all the way. So that's what's happening. They don't have enough money. But here's the little secret they have. They're trying to push off property tax increases on all of the other municipalities. We just did it. We saw it in Robertsdale, Silver Hill, and in Fulton.
We have it in Fairhope.
We did it in Fairhope. Mm-hmm. They did it in Spanish Fort. So the argument that these people are making is that, you know, we need more money for our kids, so we're going to raise property taxes. It is the responsibility of the school board, which has so much money. It is unbelievable. Their budget for next year is close to $500 million, okay? It's $480 million, I think. I can say $500 million. You know, that should be sticker shock for you. If it isn't, then we're not doing our job to get the information out there. Maybe we're not doing our job. But somehow or another, the political system has just frozen in place when it comes to this Common Core, and we have not had any progress. We are going to bring this down on the governor. It's going to be a major campaign issue unless she becomes the fifth vote. And like I told you all last week, she wasn't the fifth vote despite us getting the signals that she wanted to do something about Common Core. BS. Okay? She's got one more chance, really, this coming December 9th, I think it is. That's their last meeting before Christmas holidays and the new year. So we are going to try to push her to become the fifth vote between now and the next Board of Education meeting. We'll see what happens with it. But Lori, this is the dirty little secret. This Baldwin County should not be at this low level of performance. I'm sorry, it doesn't wash. And we're going to keep hammering on the Board of Education to undo this, or fix it, at least as best we can, along with keeping them from giving us back the mask mandate if there's a flu epidemic or if somewhat of a COVID thing. We're pushing hard on that, along with trying to make sure that we have a constitutional, you know, law that protects our people from having the mandate to get the jab or lose your job.
That was the question I wanted to get to before the end of the program, but we are way over time.
We are out of schlitz is what it boils down to. Well, Lori, you have a great Thanksgiving. I hope everyone has a wonderful Thanksgiving. We have a lot to give thanks for, that's for sure. And keep the people of Wakaga in your prayers and hope that the United States can overcome the BLM and the Antifa folks.
I'd like to say that we should be thankful for citizen activists like yourself. You don't get paid to do this radio show. You don't get paid to travel to Montgomery, to the school board meetings, to numerous other causes that you spearhead and enact. You don't get paid to chair the Common Sense campaign. You don't even have children in the public school system.
True.
So we are thankful for you and people like you. We must stand up and make a difference.
Well, here's the thing. The good thing is that Common Sense has been doing this for over 10 years, okay? But we're starting to see younger people like I've had on here, like Stephanie Dernan, like Dee Cox. These are young activists who are doing the same thing and doing it very effectively.
And they could go to commonsensecampaign.org
commonsensecampaign.org.
for more information.
And if you want to donate there too, have at it.
Okay. Then we could do an hour show.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Thank you all so much. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on Highway 98 and in Malbus on 181 with the state-of-the-art car wash. This important information is available for you to share with friends later or to listen to again at WABF1480.com. Now resuming regular programming.
I love you for sentimental reasons.